As surely as we belong to the universe, we belong together. We join here to transcend the isolated self, to reconnect, to know ourselves to be at home, here on Earth, under the stars, linked with each other. Margaret A. Kipe.
Greetings. I am Pat Embers. I am convening this morning, and we welcome Sarah Burns and the Flint Hills Pagans, who are going to lead the service this morning. We welcome you to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. Whatever the faiths you have known or the flags of your heritage, you are welcome here. Whoever you are and whomever you love, you are welcome here. And whether you run in today, or on little feet, or walked in briskly, or ambled in, or rolled in, you are welcome here. I would like to, before we have our announcements, I would like to have everybody kind of greet each other and find out who's next to you and behind you and in front of you. And now, if you found any new people, or if there are any new people that have come for the first time, if you would like to introduce yourselves, we would be happy if you feel comfortable. And so then we can talk with you after the service during coffee, too. So are there any new guests here today? Could you just stand and tell us your name, please?
Hi, my name is Amber. These are my three kids. This is McKaylee, Ryder, and Bennett. And this is our first day here. So okay. Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much for coming. Anyone else? Okay. We have a few announcements before we start.
We have one more.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
Hi, I'm Heather Staten, and this is my husband, David. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for coming. All right, one more? Okay.
Hi, everybody. This is Joni, my daughter-in-law, and our little precious granddaughter, and they flew in from Tacoma.
Welcome. All right, and the wife of your son, Rip, right? Yes. Rip counts, too. We'll mention him. And he goes back. He graduated from this fellowship. Okay. Are there any other ones? Okay, I have a few announcements. One of them is that this list of pagan events in the Flint Hills for April, May, and June is sitting on the table by the guest book and on that area, and it gives you an idea. And I think it's also mentioned in the newsletter, in our Voice newsletter. But this goes further, it goes a couple more months. And speaking of the guest table, if you're new, you can sign your name in the guest book to just, you know, I think you receive the newsletter or something like that, announcements as to what's going on. And if you're interested in membership at some point, you can talk to our membership and minister people. Okay. I want to make another announcement. And this is my special thing. I know this was announced last week, but this is the last week for registration for the Wisdom Keepers. What? Oh, okay, I thought you were talking about the microphone. This is the last week for the registration for the Wisdom Keepers gathering that's at Council Grove White Memorial Camp. This shows a teepee, which is going to be on the grounds for some of the classes, and this shows one of the 13 indigenous grandmothers that are internationally known that is going to be one of our five elders. So if you've been thinking about it or inclined, or if you know of anybody that is, please try to get it in this week. And I do have a whole bunch of flyers if anybody wants to talk with me afterwards. Are there I don't have any other announcements, so I guess that would be the end of that. Okay. And now we're going to have the calling in of the elements and lighting the chalice by the Flint Hills Pagans.
We invite you all to stand as you are able as we invite the elements. Look to the east, the realm of air. The wind brings spring storms, and the breath of life fills my lungs. Air is here, around me and within me. Air is here.
Look to the south, the realm of fire. The warmth of the sun draws plants upwards, and a creative spark drives me to begin something new. Fire is here, around me and within me.
Fire is here.
Look to the west, the realm of water. The spring rain sinks into the thirsty ground, and my love flows into all that I care for. Water is here, around me and within me.
Water is here.
Look to the north, the realm of earth. The rich soil cradles the growing seeds, and strength and preservation let my efforts bear fruit. Earth is here, around me and within me.
Earth is here.
Look to the center, the realm of spirit. Through death and rebirth, the world is renewed, and I am renewed as well. Spirit is here, around me and within me.
Spirit is here.
And now, everyone, please remain standing and join us in the circle chant, which is in the insert in your order of service. You guys want to come up?
We are a circle within a circle, with no beginning and never ending. We are a circle within a circle, with no beginning and never ending. We are a circle within a circle, with no beginning and never ending. We are a circle within a circle, with no beginning and never ending. We are a circle within a circle, with no beginning and never ending. We are a circle within a circle, with no beginning and never ending.
You may be seated.
And now we have that time, that special time in our service for joys and concerns. And the microphone will be passed around, and put it close to your mouth and tell us and share with us this morning.
Okay, first Colton has something to share.
Oh, I have a dinosaur fossil.
He brought one of his fossils with him today. And I just wanted to share a concern for me that I'm waiting on biopsy results from a skin mole that was suspicious, and I'm the same age my father was when he was diagnosed with melanoma, so I'm a little bit freaked out.
I have a Joyce. I learned to do the witch's broom with yarn. They're the witch's broom. Blah.
Wow.
Hi, Anne Marchant. Well, I apologize. This is really an announcement. I'll try to disguise it as a concern. But we are having a fellowship dinner on Friday night. We need people to come. So you can sign up out by the coffee. It's going to be at my house. It's just kind of a get-together for the... If you have questions, you can ask me. Thank you.
I have two that Jocelyn is finally back from a long time. And my friend Gavin from school, the same class, is here.
All right.
Inel Forrester, I have a joy. My daughter-in-law, Beth, had knee surgery about four or five weeks ago, and she spent her first week at work this past week and is doing very, very well. We're very proud and pleased that her knee is working and she's doing well. So it's a joy.
Great.
I have a joy that I have a new friend named Destiny right next by me.
I didn't ask Gene Severs. I didn't ask permission from Michaela, but as I understand it, she's qualified for state in music and vocal and instrumental before in groups. But as a senior, yesterday she qualified in both vocal and instrumental solos for state.
Oh, wow. If there's no others, I have one big joy, and that is that Ken came back last night about midnight and is home recovering from jet lag from Vietnam, so he'll be back, but not necessarily today. Okay, we're going to go into our children's conversation at this time.
Circle round, and I'll tell you a story about time. Long, long ago, when the world was still new, all the people who lived on the earth knew that they were children of the goddess. They loved their mother, for she was very beautiful, with her high snow-capped mountains, her deep blue oceans, her wide plains of grass, her broad deserts, and her forests of great trees. She gave them everything they needed to live, and they delighted her with songs, their dances, and the curious things they invented. More and more people were born, and they spread out over the earth. As they traveled, they began to live differently from one another. The forest dwellers learned to live amongst the great trees. The people of the plains learned how to follow the herds of the great prairies, like the bison that still roam over in Flint Hills. Some people became sailors and fisher people. Others learned to plant crops along the great rivers, like across the street right there. They called the goddess by different names and made new songs and stories. And the mother was happy, for she was never bored. People were always thinking up something new that delighted her. Although she was their mother, she left them free to grow and to change, because only when people are free can they invent new things. And the goddess loves surprises. But time passed. As people grew more different from one another, some of them became afraid. In fortunate lands, life was easy and rich. In other places, it was harsh and difficult. Some people became jealous of others. They began to fight with each other, trying to take away what other people had. They turned their imaginations to making better and better weapons of war. They forgot that they were the children of the mother. Instead, they invented new gods and tried to make people forget the names of the goddesses and gods that reminded them of the circle of life. The mother became very sad. She loved surprises, but not bad ones. She hated to see her precious children hurt each other. She cried, and they suffered and died. But mother is also wise. She knew that if her children were to be free, they would make mistakes. And if they were to grow up, she would have to let them learn from their mistakes, even if that took them thousands of years. And maybe, even from their mistakes, good things might yet grow. So she kept quiet, even when people forgot her and did things that hurt the earth themselves. Not all people forgot her. In every land amongst every race of people, many remembered the old ways. They were teachers and elders, wise people, priests and priestesses, or powerful magicians, and they were also ordinary people who never stopped loving the earth, the trees, the animals, and the birds. Many were children just like you. They knew that thousands of years might go by before human beings learned from their mistakes and began to love the mother again. But they found ways to keep her memory from disappearing. Many taught their children the ways of healing or buried images of her for people to find in later times, such as the Venus figure found throughout the whole world. They continued to do their rituals in secret, and when they died, many of them pledged to be reborn in the time when the memory of the goddess would reawaken and bring back the knowledge that the people would need. Now that time has come. Now more and more children are born into this world who will remember the circle of life and who bring with them the knowledge that they need to help the mother and to teach people how to live happily with each other. So right now is a wonderful time because all of us who are living right now can help heal the hurtful things that have been done to the earth and to the people. That may seem like a lot of work, but it can also be a lot of fun. For the things that heal the goddess are often the things that we love to do the best. Dancing, singing, doing kind things for people, planting gardens, and cleaning up our garbage, as well as recycling and finding new creative ways to repurpose items. Whenever you think of something new, draw a picture or make up a story, the goddess laughs and delights. And the more she laughs, the stronger she gets, and the more people will hear her voice and remember that we are the children of the mother. So once again, human beings in all our different lands, with all our different ways, can live in the same circle, stretching around the earth like a rainbow. I invite you to sing the children to the religious education classes, please.
Go now in peace. Go now.
I just want to mention that that particular story fits in very well with what the children are studying in the RE, which is the seventh principle of the web of life. So that was very wonderful. I read that before you read it when you sent it to me, and I copied it and I'm going to keep it. I think it's a beautiful story. Really, it's beautiful. Okay, this is the time for our offering and. Today we have our Helping Hands offertory, so we'll start out with that, and every second Sunday the fellowship dedicates its collection to go to a chosen, often local, beneficiary. And today we have the Fairy Godmothers Fund, and let's see, I'm sorry, I didn't write down the name, so I'm going to introduce her, and if she would tell us her name when she comes up. Thank you for coming.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Cheryl Grice, and I'd like to thank you so much for inviting me here today. And also, on behalf of the Fairy Godmothers Fund, I'd like to say thank you. And it's truly a blessing to be here today, to have an opportunity to worship and fellowship with you, and also for you all to open your hearts to such a wonderful organization. This organization was established probably about 7 years ago, and there were a small group of ladies that decided that they wanted to be part of creating a fund for women in need. And today, this organization is over 575 women strong. And we do provide grants to women in the Manhattan area. Excuse me. And the grants help women in ways that maybe some other organizations are not able to assist them based on federal guidelines and policies. So if women are struggling, trying to get on their feet, if they need help, you know, sometimes we just need just that little bit of extra help to get a car running or to repair an air conditioning unit or to have dentures to go out and seek a job or to get assistance with child care or assistance with tuition to complete a course so that you can be more employable. Those are some of the types of grants that have been given to women throughout the Manhattan community for the past 5 or 6 years. And I'll just share with you just a little information, a little more about the Fairy Godmothers Fund. It consists of an endowment fund, an expenditure grant fund, and an operating fund. Small grants are made to meet the immediate and critical needs of local women that are not met by traditional funding sources. Members of the Fairy Godmothers share a strong commitment to continually increasing the endowment so women can lead lives filled with promise and opportunity. The beauty of the funds is that there is no ending to the good that they may provide. Currently, as I mentioned, there are over 575 Fairy Godmothers actively contributing and participating in different events for this project. The funds are meaningfully enhanced by corporate sponsorship. Many members choose to participate on committees for this fund, and we have fundraising events and a yearly meeting. Fairy Godmothers are kept informed about the fundraising progress through the events and through our website, which is at FGFund, www.fgfund.org. And a little bit more about how the fund works. Members of the Fairy Godmothers and generous corporate donors contribute to the endowed fund. Grant expenditures are made from monies available each year from the endowed fund. A portion of the funds raised at our fundraising events and the gifts directed to the grant fund. The endowed fund will grow in perpetuity, providing more and more grant-making monies in the years to come. So that's what, as you open your hearts, what our organization looks to do is to be able to provide more and more grants to women in need. And we award grants on a quarterly basis, and it is there's a maximum of $500 for a grant. So, for example, if someone has a car that needs repair, then depending on the amount of that, we can assist in that way. A lot of the individuals in the community do provide a lot of the services in kind, as far as they may just charge what the cost of the items to repair those, excuse me, the vehicle, for example. So we have had good partnerships and relationships with the community as far as helping us assist those women in need and help them get on their feet. The grant applications are processed by the following agencies: the Flint Hills Area Agency on Aging, Home Care and Hospice, Salvation Army, Boys and Girls Club, Flint Hills Community Center, Manhattan Emergency Shelter, and Shepherd's Crossing. So if an individual has a need, then that is how they're directed through those organizations. If those organizations are not able to assist the women, then they will direct them to Fairy Godmothers. So there's kind of somewhat of a screening process to see if the needs would be something that we would be able to assist them with. So again, it's a tremendous endeavor, and it's something that so many women have embraced in the community, and it's just overwhelming the generosity that the Manhattan community has shown to support the Fairy Godmothers Fund, and it continues to grow. And again, I cannot express how much of a blessing it is to be here today and to be the recipient of your contribution to the Fairy Godmothers Fund. And I'd be more than welcome to answer any questions. I do want to say in advance, I may have to leave a little early because my daughter is getting, she's receiving an award with her youth group today. So I told her I'd try to get back to catch the end of service for that. But again, this is an organization that's been around about 7 years. We do award grants to the Manhattan area women who might be in need. And in order to become a fairy godmother, ladies have contributed $100, and that goes towards the endowment fund. And once you're a fairy godmother, you're always a fairy godmother. For those women that we've provided assistance to, then there's no necessary repayment. All we ask is that when they're in a position to give back. Yeah, that's all that's asked, is to give back. And I tell you one story real quick and then I'll finish. One of the recipients an item that was given by Fairy Godmothers. This is, let me just back up a little bit. One of our events that we sponsor basically provides necessity clothing to women at the emergency shelter, the women's shelter, and Big Lakes. And when we first started our organization, we actually went to those organizations and said, we are getting started. What can we do to help you? And one thing they mentioned is that, you know, when, say, for example, when a woman comes into the emergency shelter, they just may have the clothes on their back. And, you know, you're going through a transition. You really hadn't had time to think about what is it I need to pick up and pack with me. So just, you know, something that we take for granted, something essential as undergarments. So we said, well, let's just have, you know, a shower of undergarments and just bring all those together, and then we'll disperse them between the different organizations. So we've done that for 6 years. And one of the directors told me, she said that when this woman came into the emergency shelter, women's shelter, on Christmas Eve, and we were able to hand them a bag and say, here, go put on something comfortable, then the look on her face was just, you know, such gratitude that there was an organization that had thought about and cared about the needs and had an open and sympathetic heart to what they may be experiencing. So that's just one of the stories that just resonates with me. But thank you so much again for allowing us to be here. And I do appreciate you very much.
Okay. Thank you for telling us about the Fairy Godmothers Fund. And I want to explain that all funds not explicitly marked as for UUFM will go to the Fairy Godmothers Fund. So at this time, we'll have our music, and I'll get the baskets out.
Merry meet. My name is Bobby Halliwell. I've chosen to read an adapted excerpt from a lecture delivered by Dr. Victor Turner. Dr. Turner was an anthropologist who studied ritual and worked to further develop the understanding of liminality, the ritual state of betwixt and between. He also coined the terms communitas to describe the solidarity within a ritual group during the liminal phase, and social drama to describe the processes of group conflicts and resolutions. The title of this lecture is Images of Anti-Temporality, an essay in the anthropology of experience. He says, I am an anthropologist, not a theologian or a mystic, and make no claim to understand such high matters. I have done field work among African villagers and Mexican and Irish countrymen, with some brief glances at the rituals of Brazilian and Japanese townsmen. I have read quite widely in anthropological descriptive literature. From these direct and surrogate experiences, I have developed some working hypotheses. One of them is that I conceive human life to be dominantly social life and to be fundamentally in motion. That is, human beings are not smoothly nude enclosed subjectivities, but from conception are prepositional entities, projecting lines and plugs and covered with sockets, metaphorically speaking, which represent potential relationships with, against, into, for, of, among, inside, outside, above, below one another. In brief, humans come into existence connected with, opposed to, or disconnected from one another. Thus, we tend to form groups, whether by ascription through kinship and neighborhood, or by choice through friendship or common tasks or interests. But groups are neither simple nor enduring. They are composite, consisting of leaders and led, factions, segments, coalitions of subgroups, dividing and uniting with reference to ever-changing issues and interests. Members leave groups. Recruits join them. The prepositions change over time. Those we are with or for today may tomorrow become those we are against or moving away from. Time makes friends foes, foes friends, lovers indifferent. Time divorces spouses and espouses divorcees. Groups split like cells in nature and splice with the splinters from other groups. Our sociability is mutable, though we yearn for permanence. We also seek to rest our restless minds in meaningfulness. So said Dr. Victor Turner to the Harvard Divinity School in 1981. At a time when my own mind was greatly troubled, and not by my studies, this essay came, scooped with a Boolean search net full of other literature to review, onto my hard drive. It didn't look very promising compared to Dr. Turner's other writings, and so I read it last, just to be thorough, and found a gift from this elder of my intellectual lineage, the key to surviving one ordeal in the rite of passage that was my capstone anthropology course. Months after I graduated, Dr. Turner's words helped me to embrace the meaningfulness that set me on the path that today brings me in front of this fellowship. Before my friends here tell you the stories of their paths and lessons learned, I would ask that we all close our eyes, if that works for y'all, and take just a minute to reflect silently on our own paths and lessons that brought each of us here to where we are today. If you are ready, return to the here and now and open your eyes. I thank you for your attention, and blessed be. Next will be Mary Ann with the story of her life and path. Thank you. I began my path in the craft in 1973 and was trained in traditional witchcraft. So I brought some traditional tools. What's a witch without her broom? I was trained in a tradition called Alexandrian tradition. And just to give you a little background on that, in 1951, England repealed its law against witchcraft and other mystical things. And many covens started popping up all around in England. And during that time, a man came forward named Gerald Gardner, who wrote a couple of books. One came out in 1954, and the other came out in 1959, the year I was born. And these books talked about his induction into witchcraft in 1938. So it goes back quite a ways. But he is remembered as the father of neo-paganism or modern witchcraft. And one of his students was a man named Alex Sanders, and he studied under Gerald Gardner, and then he started forming his own coven, and that was
Alexandrian witchcraft, in which I was trained starting in 1973. So I learned a lot of very traditional things then, and I studied in that coven for 3 years, from 14 to 17, which was awesome to be able to say that I got to be a part of that, because one of Alexander's students was a man named Stuart Farrar. Brought a book by him and his wife. But he wrote a book that came out in 1971 called What Witches Do. And it really described what went on in an Alexandrian coven. And so I was trained from that book and from two books of shadows that were handwritten by people who were student. One person who was a student, he claims, which a lot of people claimed back in the 70s, that he was a student of Alexander's. And for me, that makes me happy. I'm glad to know that that was part of our tradition. But as time went on, I moved to Springfield, Missouri, where it was very difficult to practice witchcraft in the 70s and in the 80s and in the 90s, because it is the buckle of the Bible Belt. And during the late 80s and early 90s, they had kind of a phase where they outed witches and shunned witches, which was at their work and at school, which was kind of a drag, which kind of gives you a perspective on why I didn't really want to be very public during that time. But then I moved to Oklahoma City, and I had 3 children by then, and I really wanted a community. So I went to a spiritualist church that had a group much like the one we have here, and met several other people who also had children that they felt like they would like to have a community, and we formed what we called an eclectic family coven. And from then on, I pretty much raised my children in that way. But one of the great things that happened was that during that first beginning there in Oklahoma with my kids, we found festivals, regional festivals, and the Heartland Festival in the Kansas City area was the first one that I went to, which also gave a greater community for us and a greater room for learning and expressing. And people really expanded and grew and became what we call eclectic now. I mean, there are so many traditions now and so many different ways to practice the craft, but they all came from this beginning with Gerald Gardner. Although there are ancient ties to so many different traditions, we all have to kind of thank the guy that came out and said, hey, I'm a witch and I'm going to write about it. And that's how I got to where I am now, and all of my children were raised in the craft, and they're in their 30s now. And there's 5 of them. Well, 2 of them are in their 20s, my stepkids. But 3 of our 5 of those kids will go to a pagan festival now, just at the drop of a hat, if you ask them. They still really want to go and be a part of it. And that gives me great joy to say that I came from these beginnings and I learned so much along the way, and to see the way that the craft has flourished throughout the world, and the stewardship of the earth that we all stand for. So just a couple of little things. This is a book of shadows. This is where we record all of our rituals. And as a solitary witch, you do it for yourself. And as a coven, you write them in a group book. And now we have techno-pagans that do it on the computer. But that's my story. And thank you very much. I'm going to invite Raven Smith up to tell her story now.
Hi, my name is Raven Smith. I have been on the path for about 10, 11 years. I stumbled across it when I was about 9 or 10. I know that's pretty early. But for me, I was always always curious. I was always asking questions about religion, about the world around me. And my family, they're Methodist. They are very, like, strict about that. My grandmother's the kind of person who says, well, if you don't understand, just go to church this day and this day, then read this, and, well, either way, eventually, the path found me, and I've been happy ever since. But for me, I'm more of I'm a holistic healer. Go away, fly. In my family, yes, they're Methodist, but we're very unorthodox in a sense where we're all healers in a way. We all rely on herbal remedies as opposed to, like, medicines for a migraine or inflammation, will drink a tea instead of go find a pill. As for me, I practice outside of the house. I've been solitary for years, but I'm still trying to get out in the community a little bit more. But usually I'm more solitary in the summer and the spring. And for me, that's just me having my time to be one with nature. I like to go out and swim in the lake. I don't like to go to pools. I like to go run in the field. I don't like to be trapped in a track field. Just recently, actually, I traveled to Colorado, and I'm known for being very overstimulated in nature. We went to the Rockies, and I got out the car, and my friend just goes, "Oh, wow," you know, taking pictures. And then he turns around, I'm doing one of these, and he's like, "Don't do it." And I'm like, "Just look at the sky." Like, you just don't understand right now. Like, I just feel so much right now. And I've always felt that way ever since I was a kid. Simple things like that would just set me off, and I'd just start crying immediately on the spot. But, so that's a little bit about me. And I guess next up I will bring Larry to the stage, to the podium.
Good morning. My name's Larry Porter. I'm the owner of Mystic Myths here in town, and I walk a Druid path. When I was growing up, back when I was 10, 11 years old, we lived on 165 acres. Come summertime, as soon as the sun came up, I was gone in the woods. And walking through the woods, I could feel the energy. I touched a tree, I could feel the sap flowing through it. And it felt good. And I got doing research, and I'm from our history goes back to Ireland. So I started researching Ireland, and they had the Druidic belief of the Celtic people. And it just felt right. The Druids were divided into three groups: the Bards, Ovates, and Druids. And the Ovates were the fortune tellers. They're the ones that could look at the clouds and tell you what's going to happen, what the weather was going to be. They could look at the grass, at the flight of birds, and answer questions. The Druids were the philosophers, the lawyers, the priests, the advisors. And that group died out in around 500 AD when Rome conquered British islands. In the 1700s, people started doing archaeology, and they started reading back, and they said, "Oh, our ancestors weren't barbarians. They had civilizations." And in the 1700s to the 1800s, there was a resurgence of Druid beliefs in England, and part of them moved to America. And they're still going strong now. But my beliefs is that if you have a question, nature has an answer. All you have to do is walk in nature. Feel the grass beneath your feet, the breeze on your head, on your face. Touch a tree. They've got more knowledge than we will ever know. And now I'd like to introduce Sarah to close up.
My name is Sarah Burns. I think many of you have seen me here before. I am a pagan Quaker, and I took over this organization here in February of 2012 from Deirdre Morgan. And since then, we have had a really wonderful year since the last time you guys saw us in summer of 2012. We have grown to the point where we have 20 to 40 people regularly at the events that we do. And I know that most of you don't know most of us, and you haven't had the opportunity to go to those events. So you may not be aware of that, but we have benefited so much from being a part of this congregation and from the resources and all of the support that we have always been able to count on from you. So I want to thank you from that. And as far as my personal story, I did talk quite a bit last year, so I think that most of you probably have a general idea of what my background is. It's not really that exciting. it really isn't. It's a typical story. Like, I was a Christian, and then I learned some stuff about paganism, and now I'm a pagan. So I want to talk about... what I want to talk about for you is that last year at this program, we had a lot of questions about ritual and what happens at a ritual, what is a ritual, how does it work. So I want to tell you a little bit about what we do as a group and what rituals are like for us and how they come to be. So this is something that's passed around to different volunteers. We have... We hardly ever have two people in a row, or one person in a row doing two rituals. And we've had a great number of volunteers. We have a waiting list at this point. And there's a lot of different things that rituals can happen for. There's cycles of the moon. We do full moon rituals anytime we can, which is kind of a time of growth and increase. So we do new moon rituals occasionally, and that's more inward reflection type of thing. We also celebrate other natural cycles like the solstices and equinoxes, like the spring equinox ritual we just had a few weeks ago. And also some Wiccan holidays, like Beltane, which is about to come up, that Larry is doing. And also, you may have heard of Samhain, the Halloween festival in Wicca. We've had some where they were based on ancient festivals of different cultures, like last year's Two Kings New Year's that was based on both Greek and ancient Egyptian holidays. Or also, you can have a ritual just for something that the group comes together and decides they want to accomplish. Like last night, we had an emotional healing ritual. We all got together for that purpose, and we used the tools that we had to try and achieve that for ourselves. So you notice when I said that, like, we got together, we used tools. Ritual is not something that you sit and watch, typically. I mean, people can, but if you're participating in a ritual, you're actually participating. You're going and doing something as a group. And it's also, it's very visual. It's very kinesthetic. There's art, there's music, there's movement, there's dance. This morning I actually said to one of my friends, who knew that being a pagan involves so much construction paper? It's true. You know what I'm talking about. And each of those things is put together. And I think one of the wonderful things about paganism is that there's so many different traditions coming together and so many things that people are just learning, you know, and so many tools from so many cultures that we can work with to achieve what we need as far as our personal development, our spiritual development, or just physically satisfying the needs that we have in our lives. And and I think that the main characteristic of ritual that makes it distinctive for me is actually my goal is usually the creating the liminal space, the space that's between the worlds, the place that's not a place, the time that's not a time. And for me, that's the connection between me and spirit, me and gods and goddesses, or between me and the earth, you know, the point where you realize that you're not so very different from all of these other things that are around you, whether that's realizing that you're part of nature, that you're an animal, or realizing that the other people who are around you in the circle are having the same struggles that you're having, and that you fundamentally share something that maybe you wouldn't have the courage to share if you weren't in an environment that tolerated you, like, you know, taking a whole bunch of craft supplies and just mashing them together to represent something. And at this point, we do have some time left for sharing, and I'd like to invite all of the speakers to come up if you want to be available to answer some questions, because we'll be using this microphone up here. And anybody who has comments or questions, we'd love to hear it. I know you have questions. Maybe we should spread out so we're less frightening.
Hi, my name is Jody. I also am a pagan. I just wanted to touch upon the word witch. You know, so many people have so many different views when you say I'm a witch. And it immediately just technically goes back to the negative thing. But when you say witch, if you could maybe explain a little bit more about what it is. I know in dealing with my child, you know, she said, well, what exactly is a witch? You know, and I always tell her it's a wise person. And being wise comes from, you know, maybe if you wouldn't mind Marianne touching upon, you know, what being a witch actually is, you know.
Well, I think we really all talked about what a witch really is. But a witch is also a practitioner of magic, a person who uses the elemental energies for purpose. That's what we do within the magic circle or the sacred space, which she was talking about, which is, you know, between the worlds, as we call it. A time that is not a time, a place that is not a place. And a witch is, the word witch was persecuted because they wanted to take over the religion. You know, when you're stopping one religion and starting a new religion, you kind of bash the old religion. So it took up a lot of negativity, the word. And so part of what Wiccans are doing is reclaiming a beautiful word, which does mean wise one. We are what we believe, wise ones and stewards of the earth. Part of our purpose is healing the earth, sharing the earth energy, helping that flow of energy to be righted, because right now it's kind of chaotic. And part of what witches do is take that and make it a little more harmonious. And so I hope that helps to answer your question.
Yes, I just wanted to clarify.
Thank you.
Well, I'm just curious, when you are a witch, do you declare yourself, or is it a group thing? And then have you had any experiences of fear or discrimination in Manhattan from people?
Comment on that. For me, being a witch was actually, that was not a word that I applied to myself first. Somebody else applied it to me, and it was in a respectful way. You know, it was in, oh, you're a pagan, you're definitely a witch. But it took me a long time to get to the point where I would call myself that. And I think that's because it's kind of a declaration of power. Like, it's saying, I have the ability to change what's going on. I'm not helpless in the face of these cosmic forces. Like, I see how big this is, but I still have the ability to make change. And so it's kind of something that I've grown into. And the other part of your question, discrimination. Personally, I have been in Manhattan for quite a while, and I think that I have escaped a lot of problems with discrimination just because I have always been totally out there as a pagan. It's like I was never worried about anybody finding out because there was no hiding it. It was really obvious. So if anyone else wants to speak to that.
There is discrimination in Manhattan. Running a store, I see it firsthand. I've had people come in the store, open up the door, and look in and say, if I step in, am I going to burn in hell? I have to laugh at them and say, well, that's between your God and you. I've had people come in and say, do you worship Satan? I said, it's hard to worship someone that you don't believe in. But I could see there's a few that still discriminates, but there's a lot of
openness. A lot of people saying, okay, if I'm not going to burn in hell, if I step in, what can you tell me? What do you believe? And that's one thing we at the store do. We take it as a learning experience when someone new comes in. So that way we can educate.
Okay. Goodness, I already forgot the first half of the question. Give me a second. Okay, for me, the word witch, kind of like Sarah said, I'm kind of growing into it too, actually. In my high school, because I started at a young age, the word witch, it depended on the person, the tone, the situation. I had countless times in school where somebody would catch me and they'd go, oh, well, can you give me a love spell? Can you give me a hex? And I'm like, that's not what I'm about. I'm like, are you serious? And I'd even had moments in history class, we'd be talking about the Salem witch trials, and somebody would just turn, and I'm like, oh, I feel it. They're looking at me. I feel it. But for me, I'm still growing into it. It depends, like, now you can probably call me a witch, and I'm okay with it, but I'm still growing into that term. And as far as discrimination, with me and my group of friends, because I'm very, they like to say that I'm very real. I don't like to put up with drama. If you're not okay with my lifestyle, I'm not okay with you being around. So a lot of my friends, usually, they're curious about it. They want to know more. They feel the need that they believe the same thing as I do as far as understanding. They feel that the only thing about paganism in general that's scary is the fact that they don't know. So for them, they're more like, oh, well, what's this? You know, what's the stereotype and why is it like that? What do you really do? And if anything, literally like last night, I brought two of them because they're like, we want to see what you do. Like, we're tired of asking questions. We want to see what really goes on. So last night, that was a great learning experience for them. And I'm more than happy to bring them to show them that it's not like the Hollywood witches is what I call it, where you see the purple magic coming from my hands and there's a giant fire. But
you should do that.
I should. Do you see it? There it is. There it goes.
You can feel it, though.
Yeah, I can feel it.
Back in the 90s, I was really heavily into Wicca, witchcraft, paganism, and everything else. But because of the discrimination I had back then during that time period on the East Coast, in Florida, in New Orleans, I kind of got away from that because of the intense discrimination. I had children, and I lost my way for a while, but then found my way to Mystic Myths. And with the help of this family, I'm going to call them a family. With the help of this family, I found my way, I found my voice. First time I had a ritual, I was so, had such a bad social phobia, I actually started bawling and crying because I couldn't handle being around a whole bunch of people. And within a couple of weeks, I was actually starting a children's program because we have acquired so many people that have come into the program. They brought their children. I, with the help of others, have created a children's program, so we kind of have our own little, you know, Sunday school on Saturday. So I'm a Saturday school teacher and do tons of crafts with a whole bunch of construction paper. And what I do is actually complementary to what they do. Whatever the adults do, I do a basic version to teach the children the same thing that the adults are learning. I haven't really felt too much discrimination here. I have had people approach me sometimes in an antagonistic way, but because I'm so honest and open, I disarm them. They ask me, hey, why are you wearing that? Are you trying to say something? I'm like, I wear it because I like it, because it makes me happy. It makes me feel good, and it just makes me feel like a better person. And they have really nothing to really come back at, and by the end of the conversation, they're high-fiving me, and they're like, you know, way to go. People that are even considered what some people might call Bible thumpers, and I don't try to get into a fight. I just say, you know, this is what's made me happy and a better person, and for me to actually go from a person that was just sitting alone in my basement in my office day after day, not having any friends, not communicating with at all, to standing here in front of a crowd, speaking, starting a school program or a classroom program for children, doing rituals. And actually, I started a pagan school online with a bunch of friends, and we are going to be teaching others. So I've gone from being solitary, alone, and lost to actually learning and teaching others. And learning to be comfortable in my own self with the love and the trust of my family here, with the unconditional love of everybody, has helped me to face anything, whether it's discrimination. I'm not sure if I'm a witch. I'm just am. I'm learning as much as I possibly can about everything. I haven't found a path, but I've actually gotten to a place where that's okay. I'm just a sponge absorbing as much knowledge as I can. Maybe someday I'll put a label on me, but I am a mother, I am a teacher, I am a friend and a sister, and if you want to call me a witch, that's perfectly fine. That makes me happy. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Charlie. I have a kind of a dumb observation, then a couple of stupid questions.
No, well, dumb observation.
Wait till you hear it. No, seriously, what I know about witches is from Macbeth, and you don't look at all like you want to boil something in bat's blood or any of that. So you seem like a very happy group, and that's encouraging. My question first is, years ago when I was a young man, I think I read a book called Practical Mysticism by Evelyn Underhill. Maybe you know it. And if I remember, and I probably don't remember rightly, but if I remember halfway rightly, Underhill made a distinction between mysticism and magic, and he kind of spoke disparagingly of magic, didn't he? And said it's an attempt to manipulate the universe, but mysticism is an attempt to sort of join in the universe. And when you described what you did, I think you were talking more, if that distinction is right, you were talking more about mysticism than you were magic. Is that, would you comment on that? And then I have a final question.
Okay. Too. I'm talking about magic. Mysticism is a part of it. But for us, we do magic. And it is taking responsibility for what it is you're working. It's like I told my mother, with prayer, you give God the responsibility. You ask for something and you let it go, and you're giving your deity the responsibility for fulfilling your needs. As a witch, I do magic, and I take full responsibility and karmic responsibility for the actions that I do. We say, may it harm no one, do as you will. And it is sympathetic and healing and purposeful magic. Magic is manipulating the elemental energies for a purpose, and we do that. So it is magic. We also do mysticism, which is a different sort of thing, which is more along the lines of, you know, channeling or reading the tarot or things of that nature, which are a little different than actually raising energy for a purpose and sending it off into the web of life with that purpose.
Okay. Well, now let me ask the final question, which is about water witching. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, years ago...
That's dousing.
I'm sorry?
Dousing. Water
dousing,
witching?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Years ago, 30 years, we live on the acreage... miles from here, our well went dry, and so we had to find water, and it's hard to do around here. And somebody suggested dousing, and we heard various stories about water witching and so on. But that's another. What I want to ask really is, would water witching be an example of witchcraft at work?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's also, you know, whatever the dowser believes, too, but you can actually take classes in dowsing at the festivals that I talked about. They often have those.
So, yeah.
Anybody else?
We have time for one last quick question.
I
don't know that I have a question. I have a comment that I'm always delighted when you visit and talk with us. And I guess I've been, maybe this is the third time, or second or third time for me. And I think it's the transparency and your delight. And, yeah, we talk about community and our connection to all of life and that sort of thing. But we are very squeamish about, you know, making it quite as concrete as you do in your rituals in achieving that connection with all of nature. But I really always appreciate your visits and enjoy it. And thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, we enjoy being here, and as far as making it concrete, I think if there's anything that we have as our gift to you, that's probably it. We're going to have to wrap this up now, and those of us who were speaking, we're going to head up. We're going to head up there and do the closing song, "The Earth, the Air, the Fire, the Water," is in your insert. You can stand as you're able.
The earth, the air, the fire, the water, return, 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 return. The earth, the air, the fire, the water, return, 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 return. Aye, 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 oh, aye, oh, aye, oh, aye, oh, aye, 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 oh, aye, oh, aye, oh, aye, oh. The earth, the air, the fire, the water, return, 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 return. The earth, the air, the fire, the water, return, 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 return. Aye, 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 oh, aye, oh, aye, oh. The earth, the air, the fire, the water, return, 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 return. The earth, the air, the fire, the water, return, 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 return.
Realm of air. The sky stretches out above us, showing us how much we have yet to learn. Air is there to guide us on our path. Air is there.
Look to the south, the realm of fire. The sun's brightness illuminates our world, showing us how much light we have to share. Fire is there to guide us on our path.
Fire is there.
Look to the west, the realm of water. The waves of the ocean swell, showing us how much love we have to give. Water is there to guide us on our path. Water is there.
Look to the north, the realm of earth. The peaks of the mountains rise before us, showing us how much work is left to do. Earth is there to guide us on our path. Earth is there.
Look to the center, the realm of spirit. A divine spark glows within us all, showing us how we can be as one. Spirit is there to guide us on our path.
Spirit is there.
Now we'll speak the final blessing. The circle is open, but never broken. Merry meet, and merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be. We'll join you for coffee.
Yes, thank you very much to the Flint Hills.